And with that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, Matt.
Okay. Matt Davis, alcoholic. I'm going to set a timer here so I can get sober quick. I don't want to talk too many war stories, right? Okay, super grateful to be here. I'm thankful to all the sponsees that came. I have a beautiful life today, and it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to get to that. Before I start, I really wanted to talk. If someone asked me, like, what does alcoholic, can you put Alcoholics Anonymous in two words? The two words I would choose is let go, right? Because if you look at the steps, the first thing I had to do was let go that I had any power, right? Because alcohol was killing me. And then the insanity, I had to let go and allow a God of my understanding into my life. Then I had to write out my fourth step, let go of the fear of talking with another person, step five. 6 and 7, let go of those character defects. 8 and 9, go back and make amends to people and mean it from the heart. And ask for forgiveness, and how do I make it right? So there's a whole process of letting go. And then, like, another thing is, I like to think about the origin of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? How did this start, right? Because Bill Wilson had an experience, if you guys have read, you know, the Good Old Timers and all that, there's books about Bill Wilson. In fact, you can Google it. What happened to this guy, right? How did this happen? And look at where we are today. I think I talked to Ken, and he said it might be tens of millions of people have recovered from alcoholism and other addictions and all these other groups and NA and Sex Anonymous, Gambles Anonymous. All of this stuff came from this origin, right? But I was like, did it happen with Bill? So I read it up about this. I wanted to know about his experience. And, you know, Bill, in the beginning, I'm going to do a little bit of reading, but... You know, was it Ebby coming into his kitchen, right? Was it when he went to Dr. Silkworth? You know, there's a lot of different opinions, and you may not agree with me, but that's fine. But this is what I think it is, right? Because Ebby brought the message to Bill, right? Right? So who learned it from Ebby? So if you turn with me, if you want to, page 26. And if not, I'll just read it. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to get right into what I passed out to you guys. So... It says a certain American businessman. Well, this was Roland Hazard. Okay, I'm not sure if this was late 20s or early 30s, but Roland Hazard was a millionaire, right? And his family wanted him to take over the business, right? But he kept getting drunk, right? And they're like, what do we do with this guy, right? So he went, as it says in the story, he went to this celebrated psychiatrist, Carl Jung. And I read Carl Jung's book, The Shadow. It's pretty amazing. I don't know if he stole it from AA, but it's basically the inventory. Right, taking a look at how we act and how we relate to the world based upon our experiences through life. And everyone in this room has had experiences that are variable, you know, and they could cause us to be fearful, they could cause us to be angry. So I'm going to read this. This is what I got. This is a letter dated 1930, dated January 30th, 1961, in response to an 8-page letter that Bill Wilson had sent to Carl Jung thanking him for helping Roland Hazard. And Roland Hazard got sober and appeared in court for Ebby Thatcher. I'm not going to get into the whole story, but Ebby Thatcher was a drunk too, right? And if you read the story, you know, there's a part in the story where he says, we completed a jag together, we're drunk, and all this and that. And there's a joke that I heard Chuck Chamberlain say that Bill had said, you know, if I ever get as bad as Ebby, I'm going to sober up. So this guy was drunk, right? Well, Roland Hazard and this guy named Seeper Graves appeared in court and got the judge to release Ebby in his own cognizance. And they introduced him to this group called the Oxford Group, who's practicing first century Christianity. Most excellent teachings, right? Got sober, went to Bill's kitchen. So that is the story of how this happened. So I wanted to know about this guy, Carl Jung. So I read his book, checked up about him, there's stuff on the internet. And so Bill wrote an 8 to 10 page letter to Carl Jung, thanking him and all this for starting this thing, basically. It wasn't Bill, because Bill heard it from Ebby, and then Ebby heard it from Roland. So this is the letter in response that Carl Jung, the great human power, by the way, at that time on the planet was Carl Jung. He was the brilliant mind on the planet who knew the workings of the mind and behavior problems and alcoholism, clearly, and drug addiction. Said, Dear Mr. Wilson, Dear Mr. Bill Wilson, your letter has been very welcome indeed. I had no news from Roland Hazard anymore and often wondered what had been his fate. Our conversation, which was adequately reported to you, had an aspect of which he did not know. The reason that I could not tell him everything was that in those days I had to be exceedingly careful about what I said. Remember, this guy was a metaphysician, right? He was talking metaphysician. He was talking about God, the power that's around us in this very room, in my body. It beats my heart. It tells trillions of cells in your body what to do. You don't even think about your breathing unless I bring your attention to it. This is all going on without our conscious awareness. Interesting to think about. So there was things that he didn't say to Roland because Roland was sick. And by the way, Roland Hazard relapsed after a year of working with Carl Jung. He went home on the train from Switzerland. Someone asked him the wrong question. They said, "Do you want a drink?" And he's like, "Yeah." And next thing you know, in the story, he went back to Carl Jung and is like, probably with a blank check. The guy was a millionaire and said, "Help." And the story, I'll get back to the letter, but this is important. So the doctor said, "You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never seen one single case recover where the state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you." And this is Roland Hazard. "Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang." And people that are sober in here today, they get that chilly feeling of not having the ability to stop drinking. No matter how much I love my kid, no matter how much I want to save my job, no matter how much I don't want to be in jail anymore, or how much I don't want to, all of that stuff is besides the point because I'm powerless. Mind and body powerlessness. So back to this real quick, and then I'm going to get into my story. But I really wanted to nail this home. It says in the second paragraph, it says, "His craving for alcohol," this is the doctor talking about Roland Hazard, "was the equivalent on a low level of the spiritual thirst of our being for wholeness, expressed in medieval language, the union with God." So alcohol, you see, for me was a counterfeit. It made me that guy. I could get the girl. I could get the job. I was happy. I was comfortable in my own skin. But the problem with that, it was a counterfeit, right? It bites in the end. It doesn't work, as you guys know. And so there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes in this very room that I'm not aware of that I should tune into, right? And that's God, right? And to get quiet and to meditate and to seek that, right? And, you know, I found in my experience, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So I'm going to start off with telling you that I was born in this town, 1971, April Fool's Day, right, to George and Doris. My dad was a barber on the base for 42 years. And my mom was a house mother, and alcohol was prevalent in my house. I can remember, I don't know if everybody remembers those half-gallon things where you just tilt it like that and it just pours. And so I remember my dad would say, "Hey, make me a drink. Just three fingers of vodka and the rest tonic." And then one day I was like, "You know what? I'm going to try this." And I got a little jar. I poured some in there, put the lid on, hit it. And after there, went to sleep. I drank it, the whole thing. And I mean, I have pictures of me at, I think we have that picture still. It's me at 8 years old. And I remember my dad goes, "Hey, try this 151. Poured a shot glass full of 151. And my mom was fumbling around looking for a camera. And I chased it back. And then I had to act like, man, right? Couldn't let him see that. It bothered me. And she got the picture right after I took it. And I was like, shaved head, 8 years old, vodka. I mean, 151. And so alcohol was always in my life. I mean, it was always in the house. There was fighting with my brother. My dad was from Illinois. He was an ex-Golden Gloves, like a contender. He's a runner-up. So, I mean, my dad believed in the whole verse in the Bible, spare the rod, spoil the child. So when I was in trouble, I got my ass kicked. And so I don't like to fight, but I'm not afraid to bleed. And, you know, I've been through a lot in my life because of that. And so drinking was just on the table. You know, I remember getting expelled, not suspended, from eighth grade at Lakeview for, like, really hurting this kid, right? I don't even know who he is. I probably owe him a terrible amends, but or a good amends. But that was just kind of my life. I got in fights. I drank. And then pretty soon I was going into the Navy to save my life, right? And I remember I was on the delayed entry program because I was in continuation school. I went to Delta, and I couldn't finish high school. Everything I started, I couldn't finish. I was great coming out of the gate, but not much for stamina, if you know what I mean. And I would get in trouble, and I would ruin things. And then I remember I was on the delayed entry in the Navy, and
I heard a guy in a bar fight at the Lariat in Los Alamos, and he was critical. I hit him with a beer mug, drunk. That's kind of my life, you know, just get drunk and act like a fool. Not take any accountability for my actions, not make amends. I mean, I didn't, sorry, you're sorry, you know what I mean? I didn't think anything of that, and I had no clue what to do. And so I was in jail, and I remember my dad went, and the recruiter went, and they appeared in court. And the judge goes, you're in the delayed entry of the Navy? And they go, yep. And they go, all right, well, we're going to release you to, we're going to make this a misdemeanor, and we're going to release you to the Navy. And Marcus is over there. I've known Marcus for, he's the oldest standing friend in the room. I won't say how long, because I don't want you to look old. But I remember when I was in boot camp, I was like, they call you a Smurf, right? They give you like a blue jumpsuit, Navy on it. And I'm walking across the grinder, and I look up, and there's Marcus. He's graduating, so he's like 2 months ahead of me. And I've known that guy a long time. It's always good to see you. Thanks for coming tonight, buddy. I love you, man. And the Navy didn't work either. It was 10 months or something, and I got kicked out. I went to three captain's mass. I was just a drunk. I couldn't stop. I didn't know that I was powerless and that if this was vodka, I mean, I'm recovered today. I'm recovered from the mind that wants to drink, but I'm not recovered from the results of drinking. If this was vodka and I drank, I know damn well what's going to happen. I'm going to go get more, right? Because the phenomenon of craving is going to kick in. And then I'm going to go to Chewy's house and get some of that other stuff, that powder alcohol, you know what I'm talking about? So the Navy didn't work, and I just kept getting in trouble. And I got out of the Navy. They gave me a other than honorable discharge. And I got out of the Navy, and then I just started drinking a lot. It kind of just, I felt like, you know, I can't even do anything right. And pretty soon I started getting into major trouble, like felonies, and I started going to prison. And I've got 4 prison numbers. I can only remember K17224, but I had an AL number, I had an N number, P number, I think, towards the end. Just stupid shit. Just idiot stuff, right? And I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know how to stop. And I knew Alcoholics Anonymous was here because I came over here and I sat on this. This was like Fish Row if you come in. And then this was like Carl Hoffman and Carl and, you know, all those other ladies. And it just, this was the Serenity Table, they called it. And they were smoking in here. But I didn't hear nothing because I didn't know what to do. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard like 5 people, get a man that knows this book, or a woman, if you're a woman, that knows this literature and knows what happens in this book, because I'm going to explain some stuff to you that happened to me that was really profound. I have a whole new life today, but let me get ahead of myself. So, in and out of prison, right? Can't stop drinking, leaving my kids, abusive relationships, fights with the cops. I went on a high-speed chase once, and got my hand broke, stomped on the cops, and was fighting, kicked out the back. It's crazy shit. Like, who does this, right? Normal people don't act this. She put her hand up. I've known Felina for a long time. She, you know, 20 years ago, she used to share that, you know, she had bruises from the tips of her toes all the way up to her neck. And I was like, whoa, she's a drunk like me. And that's what we do, right? When I didn't know that I was powerless, that meant like I can't stop on my own. I need help. And I don't just need help. I need this book right here. And so I'm going to share something before I go on anymore with the war stories. So this is something that Ken Hinge, my sponsor, showed me. It's on page XVI4 to the second edition. It says, following a meeting with the alcoholic friend, this is Ebby Thatcher, who had been in contact with the Oxford group of the day. That's that group practicing first century Christianity, using these most excellent terms of service, cleaning up our wreckage, trusting in God. Not just like haphazard trusting God, but like having a faith that there's a power around me all the time guiding and directing me, looking for answers, expecting it, and finding it, right? That's my experience today. And so he also was greatly helped by the late William D. Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism, who is now counted no less than a medical saint by AA members, and whose story of the early days of our society appears in the next few pages. That's because after the forwards, they get right to this. Interesting enough also, like if anybody who's been to school, like if you take a calculus class, or you take a nursing class, or you take a construction class, or you take get your GED, right? You're going to get a textbook, right? And in the beginning of the textbook, it's always going to tell you what's in the pages, what you're going to learn. But I never looked at the forewords. I never looked at this, right? This is right here. It says that he was helped by Dr. Silthworth, who told him the grave nature of alcoholism. It says right here, from this doctor, the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism, a mind and body illness that I can't overcome on my own. And then it says, who's in the early days for our society, appeared in the next pages, from this doctor, he learned that. And then, though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford group, I believe there's like 26 tenets of the Oxford group, pretty hard stuff, absolutes. He was convinced of the need of a moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and necessity and belief in dependence on God. That is the formula. That's the program. If you're new, that's why we're here. This is fellowship. I'm talking about this. But the reason why we're here is we have to pound home this, I can never drink again, but I don't want to drink now, right? I have to have a moral inventory. I have to check myself and go, hey, I'm not okay. I'm pissed off. I'm irritated. I'm afraid. And sit down and write about it and then talk to someone about it, right? And then make an amends if I need to make an amends immediately. I don't sit on them very long today, right? Because I know what they are. And then helpfulness to others and then believing in this God. I call it source. You know what I mean? If I had to put God in a physical form, I would probably choose Jesus Christ, most excellent teacher. But for me, I call it source. Because it's the source of everything. And so back to my drinking, I just could not. That's on the forward to the second, if you want to know the formula of why we're here. It's also called the program. It's also called the work. It's also called, it's just everything. That little formula. So I'm drinking, right? And I'm getting in trouble, and I get out of prison, and I get a Bible under my arm, and I'm thumping the Bible in prison. Man, I'm like, being Mr. Christian guy, right? Well, I'm leave that thing at the gate. I get a bottle on the way home. And that happened over and over and over and over. And I'd come in. I've been in this room in a wheelchair. I got hit by a car on Broadway. I was drunk by Taco Bell. I was sort of catty-cornering by the, I guess there's a hotel there, a colonial it used to be. And I'm walking across the street, and I don't even care. I'm just walking out in front of cars, and I get hit by a car. 45 miles an hour, I think, totaled this car. Right, some young kid was coming from the gym, I think, whatever that gym is right there, Western Village. And I walked right out in front of the car, and he hit me. So they hella left me to Cottage Hospital trauma. I'm in like a waking, Misty and I were talking about this. I was in a coma for 71 days. Dr. Ross told me that. This is all because of alcoholism, right? But it was a waking coma. I could talk, but I was like, duh, 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 duh. And I had a severe traumatic brain injury. I had to get the patella tendon replaced in my right knee. And I broke T10 in my back. So I was critical. And, you know, Misty used to come and take care of me and change my diaper when I was in that coma because I couldn't care for myself. I guess I could eat food, but I probably would do that stupid anyway. But, yeah, it was a rough deal for me. I had an extremely bad situation on my hands. Most guys like that have alcoholism like me are dead by now, or they're in prison for life. So I stand up here, you don't even know how grateful I am that I have repaired relationships. So let's get to the crux of this. I'm getting to about 20 minutes. So in and out of prison. Making sweet promises to my family, my kids. Oh, I'm going to do better. I'm not going to drink anymore. Self-knowledge avails us nothing. It doesn't matter how much I talk about it. It doesn't matter who I promise to. The Pope could be in front of me. No, I'm not a Catholic. But if the Pope was in front of me, I could swear to lie to him. Because I was powerless. I didn't know that. I didn't learn that until this time. April 22nd of 2024. So I have like a little over 16 months. But I have recovery today. I'm going to read this before I go on with that. This is really important if you're new. So on page 122, you'll hear sobriety mentioned a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then you'll hear recovery mentioned. And I'm going to try to explain the difference to you. So all these times I would come in here when I was younger, I'd be sober, right? But if you read 122, it says cessation of drinking. Cessation means stopping or sobriety. So sobriety is but the first step away from a highly strained, abnormal condition. Well, what could this condition be if I remove the alcohol and dope and I'm still not happy, I'm still not comfortable, I'm making 30 grand a year and I'm miserable and I got no money, I'm broke all the time. And here's this lady over here makes the same amount of money and she's at peace and happy and grateful and her money lasts. Why is it that everything I do gets broken? How come my relationships are not working? Why am I not at peace in my own skin? Why do I feel uncomfortable? Why am I looking for fucking fights all the time? You know, Luke's a good friend of mine. I've known him, I think I had 4 years. Luke, Marcus used to come with me. It was a Thursday night meeting, and little Joe and Michael and Luke, they'd roll up on their Harleys every Thursday, right? And I think I was the secretary one time. I was sober like 3 months or something. And I'm calling Luke, and this is like 3 years ago before I got sober, before I got into recovery. So sobriety is just the beginning. So I didn't know that before. And I'm calling Luke. I'm like, hey, man, dude, I'm having problems with the girl. And you know, some little punk gangbanger on the bus wanted to fight me, and I didn't even say nothing. And then the lady at the store accounted me back the wrong amount of change for a 20, and I called her on it. And then she yelled at me. And he goes, he said the greatest thing to me. He goes, Matt, if you run into more than one asshole in a day, you're the asshole. And it freaking hit me, man. It hit me. I'm projecting all this shit, right? And then I'm complaining that my life isn't good. I'm spending all my money and then I'm broke. I'm the cause of all that, right? But the beauty in that is I can also have the solution here too. God's in here, right? According to this book, deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. Idea doesn't mean memory. That's something I learned at church when I was a kid. Fundamental means the makeup of what we are is this power we call God, or I call source. And it beats my heart. It makes me breathe. It makes me healthier. It makes me grateful and it makes me happy. So, but I didn't know that until I got in this time. And if you're new and you don't know that, get a sponsor, right? It's not like you're getting someone to tell you what to do. It's like getting a guide, right? If you're going to go hike Everest, you might want to find out about a guy that's been there, right? Why is you going to end off over a cliff or something bad? It's good to have somebody who knows this stuff. So I'm in and out. I'm broken. I got hit by the car. I was in a coma. I get out of the hospital, and I'm drinking like then immediately, taking pain pills, and then I'm just like drinking with pain pills, and I'm all jacked up. It's like Bill Wilson with heavy sedatives and drinking gin. You know what I mean? I just couldn't stop. I was powerless. That means everything, if there was a 6-foot sphere around my body, everything within the sphere cannot stop getting loaded. That's powerless. So self-knowledge isn't going to help because that's in the sphere. You know, relationships aren't going to help because, so all of that happened and broken. I fell. I was doing pretty good. I was sober, but I wasn't in recovery in the first couple years, 2017 and 18, and then 2019, I was a handyman in town. I was doing really good, and I knew a contractor by the name of Wayne Schaefer, and he says, hey, man, you want to do some work with me? So we would go out of town, right, and we'd go to, like, Eagle Rock and Glendale, and they would do these additions, and I'm pretty good at what I do. I do structural concrete and framing, so he'd leave me with a big roll of plans, and I would basically dig the footings and frame the house, and then the other guys would come and put all the, you know, drywall and electrical and all that. So I was doing pretty good. And then I got a job with AJ Deani. I knew Jeff Neal. He's the main guy there. And I saw him at the Y. And he goes, hey, man, don't you know a shit a lot about concrete? I go, yeah. And so he got me a job. And I went on this huge government job up in the hills of Santa Barbara above Tahigas. And I fell 18, just under 18 feet, because 18, there's a yellow line. It means if you go above that, you need 2 points of a, I had a pelican hook that I would clip on, but if you go above 18 feet, you need to hook your yo-yo. So when you disconnect one, if you fall, you have protection. Well, I was just under the 18. I remember I could see it right here with my hard hat. And we were running these big steel rods with cowbells through the form, and they were covered with grease so you could pull them out after the concrete dries, and I slipped. And I fell, basically 18 feet to the concrete. I hit my head on the DOCA form on the way down. Got another traumatic brain injury. and broke my forearm, deranged my knees. I've had just got my left knee replaced, full replacement. It was awesome, actually. It works good. But before that, I had like 6 different surgeries. I have like 8 dead people's tendons in my knees. You know what I mean? I've been broken, hit by a car. I kissed the bumper of a car. And, you know, when I was 18 years old, I fell off of Red Rock, a cliff in Red Rock. I was drunk. And it was like 100 feet, but it was like at this angle. And I would fall, catch air. And it's, why am I still alive? I mean, I've had shotguns by insane drug, like guys that make meth, stuck in my face. I mean, like on the end of my nose. And the look on this guy's eyes was like, I was going to die. And I didn't die. And all these things keep happening. And I can't see that there's a power around me, right? I can't see that what Carl Jung talked about in Roland Hazard is that I'm really seeking God, right? I'm really seeking this connection with Source. But I'm thinking that, you know, the roller coaster ride is going to... You ever notice that when you get a new car, you really want that car, and then you're showing everybody the car, right? It's a badass car. And about 2 weeks later, you're like, this fucking thing, right? Or you get a new relationship, and you're super happy about that. And then in about 3 months, you're like, that chick sucks. Right? Or you get a $5 an hour raise. You're making $200 a month on your check, right? And pretty soon, you're like, that fucking the IRS is getting fucking more, you know, 2/3 of that shit or 1/3 of it, right? They're getting $30 out of two. You know, we're not grateful. Everything doesn't fix it, right? The new job, the new car, the new house, the new suit, new shoes. It doesn't matter. We're always never satisfied, right? We're always uncomfortable. Well, this guy, Carl Jung, who is the great human power, said that what we're all seeking is this source of power we call God. And that when I can connect with that, all the doors in my life will open up. Abundance, prosperity, hope, success, men to help, right? Sponsor, a good sponsor that will guide me through challenges, difficulties, deaths in the family, whatever it is, I can face it today. So I'll tell you what happened when I got sober, and this is pretty profound for me, and it was amazing, and I'll never forget it because it changed everything for me, right? I'm so happy today. I have such a peace inside. My mind is quiet. My heart is happy. And how I got to that was, so I fell from the job. I remember I was, Misty and I were living together, and I think I went and got a bottle or something, you know, and she's like, are you fucking drinking? What? And I started drinking, and then it was off and running. She's like, you got to go. And I left. I'm living at my mom's house on McCoy Lane in a mobile home, fucking tin can, right? And I'm drinking, smoking meth. No, wait a minute. I haven't had meth for like 8 years. So since the fall, I haven't had meth. But prior to that, I was thinking, you know, I smoked a lot of shit in that house, right? And that was part of my problem too. So if you're a drug addict, welcome, because it's a spiritual problem. This right here says the identification right here, page 43. Is that pages? 44. So if you're a drug addict, right, it says this. If honestly you want to, you found that you cannot quit entirely. This is in the context of alcoholism. Remember, Dr. Silkworth helped people with drugs too, right? Dr. Paul was using slamming morphine and pentanol in Acceptance is the Answer. Read the page, right? There's no more dead, like stuffy alcoholics only in here. I don't only drink vodka. I don't want to hear about your meth. Well, you know what? It's a spiritual malady. And it says right here, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or with when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take. Yeah, all the time. You're probably alcoholic. Now, this is the next sentence after that. I don't know why it's not on there, because it's powerful. It says, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. What kind of illness is that? Right? I think the physician desk reference is like 4 inches thick, right? It's on the doctor's desk, right? I doubt if you flip to the index of that and any disease on there, it says, the spiritual experience is the solution. So that was always curious. That stuck in my mind. Like, why? What's this spiritual illness? What is this condition that I have that has nothing to do with alcohol and drugs? Alcohol and drugs are actually my solution to medicate that emotional unrest within me. So I fell on the job. I did all that right, and then I was at 2023. I decided that I need to get out of my mom's mobile home. You know, a plant can't grow under a box. I just intuitively knew that I can't live with my mom anymore. I got to do whatever I can do for myself. So I went to the homeless shelter. You know, I said, screw it, man. I went to the homeless shelter. I put all of my stuff in storage, and I went to the homeless shelter, and I just knew that, you know what, the time for talk and half measures was over for me. I needed help now. So I went to the homeless shelter. I remember sitting there. I had no self-esteem. I'd get 20 days sober, come in here. I couldn't get sober. I didn't know I was powerless. I didn't have the solution. I didn't know the steps and the need for a moral inventory. I didn't have any clue. By the way, if you're new, a moral inventory is the reason why we're getting loaded, right? Because I don't know about you guys, but the party was over a long time ago. I'm drinking to medicate my emotional state of mind so that I can be okay in this body. And so I'm at the homeless shelter, and I got my head down. I mean, I'm looking at my shoelaces everywhere I go. I got no self-esteem, but I can't let no one know that, so I'm acting tough and cool. But I was broken. And the director, Kirsten, seen me, and she goes, Matt? I go, hey. She goes, weren't you in the fucking Navy? And I go, yeah, I was. She goes, come here. And I sat behind her desk. She's got a computer in front of her, right? And she gets my Social Security card and my ID, and she's behind the computer, and she looks up, and she goes, you know, you qualify for every program we got. And I go, what does that mean? She goes, I can get you housing. I can get you help from the VA. And I felt instantly like a relief, right? And then it was probably another month. I was sleeping on a cot in the cafeteria. I don't know if anybody knows about the homeless shelter, but it was an overflow, and you'd sleep. It was like a World War II cot. It was canvas and aluminum. And I was grateful to have that, right? Because I wasn't underneath my mom's roof anymore. I was trying the best I could. I wasn't getting sober because I didn't know I was powerless, right? And by the way, I wanted to mention this. I've been meditating for probably 15 years. I got into it when I was in prison. Really ardent and deep meditation. And that, besides understanding that I was powerless, has probably been one of the biggest tools for me to connect with this source of power around. So I meditate daily. I don't miss it. I just assume not brush my teeth is not meditate. So I'm in a house now. I'm doing good. I got a place to live, and I'm drinking still, right? Now I'm drinking vodka. You know, normally it was Crown Royal, but I'm drinking cheap shit, right? Just in the mornings, in the afternoons, I'd go to meetings. Glenn would take me to meetings, and I would be like, sorry, dude, I've been drinking. And he's like, that's all right, just come. They were loving and kind, you know? They just supported. They were like, just keep coming. And then that went on for about a year. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, in May 29th of 2023, I totaled my Toyota Tacoma coming back from a fishing trip. That's another brush with death I had. I was coming, if anybody's come from Lompoc on that road, the last sweeping bend where it turns to Clark, I just fell asleep at the wheel and went straight. Totaled this car. I mean, she's actually got pictures of it. I don't, but I ruined it. I just put $5,000 underneath it, and alcoholism had me, and I couldn't figure it out. And so I've recently been in Veterans Treatment Court. I just got my license back, and they graduated me to level 3. So, you know, basically I can do what I want now. I just have to continue what I'm doing here, right? Helping other men, reaching out to guys, and passing on what has just been freely given to me. I didn't have to do anything but come here. So I'm just about to the port where this happens, and I'm as dead as a man could be and still breathing at this point. I got no self-esteem. I got no family around me. Nobody wants to talk to me. I basically hate what I see in the mirror. I can't have any relationships that are harmonious. My little girl doesn't want nothing to do with me. I'm just in that place the eye doesn't see. And if you're new and you feel that way, you can get my number after the meeting. I'll help you. I'm going to tell you what I did here. Let's see, what time is it? 7:46. Okay, so I'm suicidal, basically, right? I've got this Smith & Wesson utility knife, and I'm a carpenter. I've been a carpenter for years, right? And I got a brand new blade on it, and I'm sitting in my leather chair. I got a remote control and a bottle in one hand, and I'm just watching the TV, and I'm watching just stupid shit, right, to try to change my way of thinking. I'm just miserable, right? I'm not meditating at this point because his alcoholism has got me. I'm going down, and I'm like, I've never contemplated suicide at this level. I've talked about it. I've threatened it. But now I'm like, just want to check out, right? So I'm going to open up this artery right here. I'm a pretty tough guy. I've been hit by a car. I fell off a wall. I've been in fights. I'm not afraid to get hit. I'm not afraid of pain. So I'm just going to open this up. And I remember I talked to Nate. And Nate gave me the Bill Wilson prayer. And Bill Wilson said a prayer in the beginning. He said, if there be a God, let him show himself. And I said that, man. I said that every day, days on and days. It took about 10 days. And then all of a sudden I called Roman from Pathways. And anybody who called Roman, he never answers the phone. And he happened to answer the phone. I said, hey, man, I need a bed. And I'm paying rent over here, but now I'm going to go pay rent at Sober Living Home. And I went in there and I said, you know what? The time for talk and half measures is over. I'm going everything all in, all my chips into this deal. I'm going to do everything they tell me to do because I'm ready to kill my own self, right? Take my own life. And I never really, ever really felt that before. And I went in there and you know what? I went to the meetings. I prayed and meditate. Nate came every Sunday and we went in the garage and I wrote the steps out and we'd go through it and he'd share stuff with me. And I read the literature like my life depended upon it because it did at this time. I got back into meditation, and I've tapped into a place of meditation where I can be very quiet for 30 minutes now. It's beautiful. My demeanor has changed. My relationships have changed. I did the steps with Nate all the way through. Immediately got Ken because Nate has two little kids, and I just needed something dip more. And I ran into this guy, Ken. He came to the book study, and when he spoke, God spoke to me. And I went to him up to him after the meeting, and I just walked up to him. And if you're new and you don't know how to ask a sponsor, just do it. Just go up to him and say, "Can I have your home? Can I have your phone number? Will you do the steps with me?" And so I went up to him. He gave me his number. He came to my house on a Wednesday, and he goes, "Man, you got a nice place." I said, "Yeah, I'm 7 months sober. That was, It was about 8 months ago." And I said, "Hey, listen, He goes, "You're kind of young to be retired." I told him about the job and how Social Security retired me. And he goes, "You ever thought about going to school?" And I said, I didn't know Ken at all. And I go, "Yeah." I was thinking about becoming a DSA inspector because I've done all these union jobs, right? I've worked in the union. And he goes, "You know what I do for a living?" I go, "No." He goes, "I'm a DSA inspector." I go, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, I got 15 guys working for me." And so started this process. I went through the steps again with him. I did my inventory. I pulled my old inventory out because I kept it. Nate told me to keep it. And I went through it and I've seen where I missed stuff. Amends. People that I didn't say sorry to. Forgive me. I didn't say sorry to. I didn't say, "How do I make this right? I was wrong. I shouldn't have treated you that way. I shouldn't have said that to you. How do I make this right?" And the whole thing opened up for me. He had me go to LA in August to test to become a concrete field inspector, and I did it. I 100% the whole thing. I've never had any marks like that in school. I couldn't go to school. Somehow I've tapped into this source of power that's directing and guiding me. I'm leaving tomorrow to go for 2 weeks to LA again to get my reinforced concrete inspector's license. Just another certification before I become an inspector. And all this stuff is happening. And I feel like there's a power guiding and directing me in my life today. And it's not anything that I could take credit for. It's just God. You know, that's an easy word for anything. And the meditations that I have now, I listen to different teachers and I'm able to stay quiet inside. And I'm very happy in my life. I went and made amends to some people that I really treated bad. And I told them, "How do I make this stuff right?" And I meant it. And things are shifting. And people are coming up to me going, "Man, what happened to you? Who the fuck are you, dude?" And I'm like, the steps. And I have hope in my life today. And things are looking good. I'm probably going to be in a house in a year, my own home. And I think I'm going to go work for Ken because I love the guy. He's great. Anybody who doesn't know about the book, you should come to the Tuesday 7 o'clock meeting in this room. And so when I talk to people about the book work and what I've done, and I show them what I've done, I hope that I'm a good example of that, right? Because my experience is my experience. Like, if we talk about God, God isn't in a place, right? He's an experience. That's what I learned. And that I don't know how to pass on what I have other than just tell my story and say what's happened to me. And now I hope you enjoyed the Carl Jung thing. He's a pretty amazing guy, right? And he talked about there's an act, we can access this power, but we have to find out what is blocking us from that power. And I think the inventory process really did that for me. It helped me see how I was perceiving the world, what I was putting out into the world, and then what I was getting back. Instead of going, hey, for what I got back, look at what I was putting out. What am I available to do today? And I have a life better than my... Billy told me this years ago. He said, by the way, Billy gave me this. This is the first edition big book. It's a 10th printing, 1946. It's my most valuable possession right now next to my family. Thank you, Billy. And I hope to pass this on to someone one day too. It's not even marked up. It's basically mint condition. And interestingly enough, how it works is on page 73. It's not on page 58. It's differently printed. Look how thin it is, huh? And so I got my license back. I bought a new car. I get to take my... I took Anira and Misty. We went to Universal Studios for Halloween, Fright Night, right? And we went and did all that stuff, right? And we went out to dinner. And you know, yeah, man, good stuff, man. Look at what God's doing. And then when we were driving back, she drove most of the way back, and in Santa Maria, we gassed up, and then I drove them to Lompoc. They fell asleep. And I looked over, and she's sleeping in the car. I'm like, this woman trusts me enough to fall asleep in the car while I'm driving. I'm a fucking maniac. I did 15 years in state prison. I lived in a cage with animals, right? I just as soon punch you in the face and shake your hand. Now I want to help people. I want to encourage them. Lean into meditation. Lean into these steps. And lean into the grave nature of alcoholism, the need for a moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and necessity and belief and dependence upon God. The formula, the program, the plan, the work, there's all types of ways we talk about it. But I have a bitch in life today, and you know what? I can't take any credit for it. I can just say that I got on a path, and once I did that, I just said, you know what? The time for talk and half measures is over, right? What you do is not my responsibility. My reaction to what you do is 100% my responsibility. So that whole thing that Dr. Paul said, it says, when I am disturbed, it's because some person, place, thing, some fact of my life, the objective reality, everything out on this side of the eyes, when I'm disturbed, it's because I find it unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept those things as being exactly the way it is supposed to be. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. In the last analysis, it's only there that God can be found. Right here. Right here. In my perceptions, in my attitudes, in my outlook, particularly in my meditation time, I have to get quiet on a daily basis and say thank you. And I'll share this too. This is something that I do. I learned it from Muji. He said two of the greatest prayers in the world are one are help, and the other is thank you. And if you could just get quiet and thank God, and it started out when I was at the homeless shelter, I was just grateful that I had a place to live, right? Grateful that, and then when I got sober, I'd be grateful that I was at Pathways. Just really grateful. And I talked with, you know, Joey, one of my guys I'm working with, and how, you know, not being dope sick or locked up, that's a huge deal, right? If your life is repetitively getting loaded, just to experience gratitude. And now I do it, and I almost feel like I'm in front of my dad and he gave me the greatest gift in the world. And I just say, man, thank you for the gifts of my life. And I'll go through everything, my place to live, the car, the recovery and sobriety, because you can't find recovery without being sober first, right? That's the beginning. It's the first step. Doing the steps, making amends. Holy shit. When I can clean up my wreckage and get back to serenity, and when I'm disturbed, I know that it's not out here. It's my perceptions and how I look at the world, and go reverse that a little bit, write about it and go, oh yeah, my social instinct is in jeopardy. My sexual and my relationships aren't in harmony. Now I have a formula to look at and get back to serenity. And I don't even know how to thank you enough for being here, because if you weren't here, then I wouldn't have found this. And then Nate got me going, and then I found Ken. And Ken's got me on this formula, and he's got me chasing down the history and looking at how this thing came to be, right? Because this is no fluke thing, right? This isn't Raider Nation, man. This is a whole transformative situation. No diss to the Raiders. And, you know, this woman took care of my father when he passed away. He had cancer. I would come and take care of her. She took care of my child. I don't deserve you. But I'm very grateful for all the people that have came to support me tonight. And I hope that I said something that hit home to you, something that'll make you realize that there's more going on here than not drinking and doing dope. And I hope you can hear this one. The time for, if you're struggling, and even if you've been sober for years and you're not feeling like life is good and you're not successful, you don't feel grateful, your relationships aren't harmonious, you feel blocked, something's missing, and you're never getting to that point of like, man, here it is. The time for talk and half measures is over. Throw everything into this stuff. Because I did it, and I got a bitch in life right now. And I'm so thankful for the work, for the steps in the program, and what it's done to my life. And I'm excited to see what's next. I'm going to LA, like I said, Monday until the 17th. And I'm coming back with that certification. I'm coming back with it. I'm going to pass. And so I want to share something that I read years ago, and then I think I'm going to close with this. It's 8 o'clock. This is a prayer that I read when I was in a prison cell. It gave me hope. It gave me to look for optimism and positivism. It's Christian, so if you're not Christian, don't feel bad. It's just wisdom. Wisdom is wisdom. It works in any religion. But it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Thank you for coming, and thank you for listening.
All right, let's give Matt another round of applause.